I'm deep in thought.
You're still stuck in 5 o'clock.
Yeah. You know, I hate people that still use 24-hour system. Mm.
Like, you what hate time it, people that do it?
Yeah. Mm. That are like, oh, it's 1,800 hours. Like, really? Are you in the military?
Your dad has.
I know. That's exactly what I was thinking about. I'm like, really? Trying to be cool. Trying to make it more... complex? Like, why?
Why make it more complicated than it needs to be? That's making it more complicated.
It's like chopsticks. You know? Like, I understand you didn't have forks back in the 1600s, but, like, you can adapt. Like, we don't have horse and buggies. Well, not all of us.
We kind of do.
You know what I mean? Like...
It's like chopsticks.
It's like we don't have a glass. We just use a leaf to drink. Because that's all we had, like, 600 years ago. So we don't want to... maintain that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Welcome back, Crime Poppers. I'm Natalie.
I'm Adam.
And we're just your average married couple spending quality time covering true crime. Join us weekly as we pop open true crime cases and casually debrief what we think happened, along with our other shenanigans, of course. We have 52 ratings now on our Apple Podcasts.
Nice.
That's pretty good. You didn't really believe me when I was like, come look at all these reviews. You're like, what? People are actually writing and reviewing our podcast? Yeah, hell yeah, they are. I'm actually going to read you some of our reviews that people have left us, okay? Oh. I don't think you've seen these yet.
No.
So RayJ15 says, when the babies are finally asleep for the night, instead of trying to get some sleep, I instead listen to this podcast. I count the days till the next one is released. Natalie and Adam are so funny, and I love listening to their banter and chemistry. They are relationship goals.
Wow. That's impressive.
Love it.
Nice.
Jackie H11 says, great dive into true crime cases. Love the banter between Natalie and her husband, Adam. Natalie is obsessed with true crime, and her husband, not. Makes for a great listen.
Accurate.
Facts. Yep. Leah_RRT says, love this duo. Love the two perspectives of each cases. Thanks for the storytelling. I think I'm addicted. Girl, us too. We are addicted. Well, I'm addicted. You're just along for my addiction.
I'm just a dick.
All right. Enough chitty chat. Let's get into the case I have for you today. I actually had a lot of fun researching this case, and I think it might be my favorite one yet because there were so many intense theories, one including an alligator, and I just can't believe someone almost got away with this. And if it wasn't for that advocate family member again,
always
not giving up, this case, I think, would be still cold as ice. Hmm. This is the murder of Jerry Michael Williams.
Oh, a male victim. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's pop this case open, shall we?
I'm ready.
Jerry Michael Williams was a 31-year-old successful real estate appraiser in Tallahassee, Florida. Seems like have we done like a few real estate ones now? I feel like we have.
Well, at least that's the one, right?
Completely coincidental.
Coincidental. It's coincidental.
Although born with the name Jerry, he actually went by Mike. So that's what we're going to call him.
Big Mike. Contrast.
Oh, well, no, his middle name's Michael. So
my name's his real name is Michael?
No, his real name's Jerry Michael.
Oh, but you can call me Michael? Okay. That's just... Okay, never mind. Go ahead. It's like... My name's Adam, but you can call me Ron. But my friends call me... Like, what? Anyway, I'm sorry. Just...
Mike was reported to be a quiet-spoken, kind-hearted man who cared deeply for his friends and family. He married his high school sweetheart, Denise Williams, who he met in the ninth grade at a private Christian school. So they went to university together, and they were what seems to be soulmates. Like, they had been dating since grade nine, stuck together right from the beginning, and kind of sounds like relationship goals, right? In high school, you're always jealous of those, like, did you know those couples in high school that are still together today?
No, none of them worked out, actually.
That's so funny. I know one couple from high school that are
was
still
together. Was the grass greener on the other side? Yeah, it turns out I was.
Grade nine, you're like a baby.
Yeah, actually, my brother He was 18 and she was 15, and they've been married, two kids, you know, since.
That is true. I totally forgot about them. Yeah. Prime example. 18
and 15.
Damn. 15, eh? You're like a baby. I'm sorry, but like at that age, can you really know who your soulmate is?
No.
No.
No, you just haven't experienced life yet.
Exactly.
And you never will.
No.
Not with my brother.
Oh. So anyways.
Now he's a stay-at-home dad and she's a doctor. He lucked out. I know he's not going to ever listen to this, so I can talk shit all so I want. So true.
Imagine he messages Lex next week. He's like, you threw me under the bus.
Well, for yourself. No, he's actually pretty lucky because he basically...
Hey, he's smart. So they went on to marry in 1994, and then in 1999, they welcomed their daughter, Ainsley. So they were your all-American fam jam. They had like the entire package. And it's reported that Mike treated Denise like gold. He was extremely successful in his career. He's said to have been making $200,000 a year. And that's U.S. And that was back in 2000. So
wow.
He was making like good dough. Was.
Yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm. In a Crime Watch documentary, Mike's brother said that Denise basically got everything she wanted. And she actually ended up staying at home after their daughter was born. So she was a full-time housewife, like stay-at-home mom. So Mike and Denise had this couple that they were extremely close with, Brian and Kathy. So the four of them were, they met in high school. They all knew each other in high school and they remained super close. They got married around the same time and they even started their families around the same time. They would go on double dates and they traveled together. So they were pretty tight. And Mike and Brian were actually inseparable. They were besties. And they shared a huge passion and interest in hunting. On December 16th, 2000, Mike had planned to go out early morning duck hunting at Lake Seminole, about 40 minutes away from where he lived. And he told his wife, Denise, that he'd be back before noon because they had planned to travel out of town to celebrate their sixth wedding anniversary, which was actually the next day. So they were going to go to town. So he's like, I'm going to go duck hunting for a few hours. I'll be back before noon and then we'll kind of pack up and get ready to go. So this day wasn't really an ideal day to go hunting. It was just really cold, like freezing. There was a storm coming and Mike doesn't come home at noon. So Denise starts to get a little bit worried and starts calling around to the close friends. She called Brian. She called her dad and like, you know, Mike's still not home yet. Like maybe I'm just being super nervous, but he said he'd be home by noon and he's not really the type of person to not show up or come back. And so they started to get nervous. Then it's about 4 p.m. and they're like really starting to, you know, freak out, thinking something seriously has gone wrong. So
like no cell phone or anything? Like what's...
Well, he had a cell phone, but apparently like no one was reaching it. He didn't like... I don't know. There was really no talk about like if he had pinged his cell phone in that area. There was really no discussion about him having a phone. But so again, like 4 p.m., they sent a search and rescue team out there because they just didn't have a good feeling. And
well, that's pretty good that they acted pretty fast.
Okay. So Brian and Denise's dad go down to the lake looking for him, thinking, you know, maybe he just lost track of time. Maybe he still is out there. Maybe he doesn't have reception, or maybe he broke down and they're going to get out there and see that he's struggling and, you know, help him out. But when they get down there, what they did find was, well, definitely no Mike. Mike was nowhere to be seen. But what they did see was Mike's 1994 Ford Bronco near the boat launch where the trailer was still attached, but there was no boat. So they're like, okay, he made it here. No boat, no Mike. Like where could he have gone? His truck's still here. So they start to go into panic mode and the authorities are called right away. And then they really go into a full blown search to figure out like, where is he here? Is he not? Like what happened? They even call in the Florida Fish and Wildlife Authorities because they're more familiar with the waters. And to be honest, they've heard of this kind of thing happening before where someone goes missing, like accidentally falls over. Because this swampy like body of water where you go duck hunting was infested with alligators.
Is it alligator or croc? Like,
what is even the difference?
There's a difference, but
do you know the difference?
Apparently it's more of a size thing, I think.
Huh.
Like alligators are a little more like narrow, pointier noses. More,
well, what I do know is that they can eat people and they have eaten people. In fact, there has been over 79 alligator related deaths in the surrounding ponds and lakes, which I think is why on the surface, it doesn't say like years, but That's a good question. But yeah, like 79 related alligator deaths in that like kind of surrounding.
It's a hot spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't want to fuck with that.
Hells no. And I think on the surface, that's why they automatically thought, okay, he probably fell in and got eaten, but like got attacked by an alligator because it had happened so much there. So it just seemed like a, you know, like a clean walk, like a in and out kind of situation, right, because it's kind of something that has happened, right?
Right, right.
I'll touch on this again in a bit, but the search is taking them well into dark and this storm is just progressively getting worse. It's freezing. There's so much wind blowing. And they did have a helicopter kind of hovering the area and they did see a boat about 220 some odd feet out past the boat launch where Mike's truck was. So they take a boat out and discover that it is in fact Mike's boat, but there's no Mike on the boat. They're like, fuck, this is no bueno. Like, we now know for sure that Mike is missing and we need to get moving on this fast because he's clearly like, where else is he? He's got to be somewhere around here. And they're thinking he fell in the water, right? And again, it's getting dark. What they did find on the boat was Mike's shotgun, but it was still in the case and the boat was turned off and there were two life jackets on board. And that was about it. There was no other signs of struggle or, you know, that he, you know, something bad, like he cut himself or, you know, anything, nothing. Again, in everyone's head, they're thinking this probably wasn't the best boating or hunting conditions. Like there was a storm coming. What are you thinking? He's probably hit something. Like there's, if you look at photos of Lake Seminole, it's like there's these big stick or not sticks, like they're big logs, you know, kind of hanging about 2 or 3 feet out of the water. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it'd probably be a hard pond to navigate around. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have to know the area.
Yeah. And you gotta be careful. Like if you're boating, you could get hit in the head and fall out, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And with like alligators there, like you don't want to be messing around, but Mike was no idiot and he had been there several times before. Like this wasn't his first rodeo at this pond and he kind of knew what he was doing. He was an experienced boater and hunter. So there wasn't really any situation like that the family thought that he would just like hit one of these logs and fell over. But the search goes on for days and days and they're thinking, you know, eventually they're going to find a body in here. It had to have been an accident and maybe the alligators got to him. And then they start thinking, okay, like what was he wearing? And you know, those, they call them waders. And this is something I learned in this research, but you know, those waders that, they're like the rubber boots attached to like an overall,
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. You can go so in shallow them, water.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get wet. Yeah.
So for people listening, I didn't know what waders were.
I didn't
but
know what they're called, but I knew what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fly fishermen.
It kind of reminded me of those, biker overalls that you bought.
Oh,
super sexy things.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's pretty common knowledge that these waders, you don't put them on until you're in a shallow body where you're planning to get out of the boat to do some like whatever fishing or pulling things in. So it's pretty common knowledge that if you fall in wearing these waders that you're going to have a hard time getting out of the situation. A lot of people have actually drowned from wearing them because they weigh you down and they're hard to get off. The search and rescue team are searching for the waders at this point because they're thinking, okay, they know he brought the waders with them. And they're poking around with long PC tubes. Is that what they call PVC?
Like PVC.
PVC tubes.
Yeah.
So they're trying to disturb the waters to see what comes up because this particular lake is really swampy. Right. And the visibility was shit. This is kind of like if you're thinking about where alligators like are infesting, like this is where they are.
I went for a tour in the Everglades when I was in Florida on those like airboats.
And how was that?
It was awesome.
Okay, so but you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lots
all those,
of
weeds. Like reeds, whatever, I don't know, like mangroves is what we were.
Yeah.
It was cool, but man, like, I mean, the gators are mostly just scared of you. Like the minute you try to see one, like they're gone. Like
that's
they're taken
true.
Away.
The noise. They don't like the noise.
They just don't like anybody. I mean,
well, also like thinking of what you know. If you fell in the water in those weeds, like say you went, like you'd never, it'd be so hard to find a body. So if that were the case, Mike would have been the only body never found out of those 80 attacks that went missing in that particular body of water. They keep searching days and days. They found nothing. For a second, they're super suspicious by all this. And although they all really just want this to be a clean case of, you know, just an accident, Mike's mom, Cheryl, which is another large part in the story, Cheryl Williams, she wasn't buying any of it. From the get-go, she had it in her mind that she was just not going to stop looking until she had confirmation of his whereabouts, whether she, you know, whether it was a body part or a piece of clothing or located his body. She was not going to give up. One important thing that Cheryl couldn't get out of her head was something that Mike actually told her specifically about alligators, and that they do not feed in December. So during the winter months, they actually... they don't really go out in the waters at all. Again, probably because they store their food underground or in places that they can easily...
metabolism would be really low because of the colder water. So I just know for fish, they do not eat typically much when it's cold.
And that is similar to alligators. Yeah. And the wildlife commissioner made a note that gators at this time were actually on the shore. And apparently you can tell when their skin, like their skin was dry. Like there was just no indication that they were out in the water hunting. Cheryl was onto something here. And it really is a good thing that she kept pushing, because 10 days after his disappearance, they find a fishing hat in the water. And although they weren't able to confirm that it was for sure Mike's, like they showed it to his mom, they showed it to Brian and Denise, and they're like, it could be his, but we're not, like, we can't say for sure. But it was still pretty suspicious that they found a hat. Now they're like, okay, there must be more down here. If they thought they searched the entire area and then all of a sudden just a hat appears out of nowhere, like maybe they're just not hitting the right spots.
How can you search the entire area?
I know. That's true.
But I'm assuming we're talking about like hundreds of square kilometers?
Well, or? I was reading that there was over 700 man hours spent on searching for him. So it seems like it was a pretty intense, you know, search and rescue operation. Yeah. But at this point, Denise is ready to stop the investigation. She's just, the whole time, she wasn't really open to any sort of media attention, didn't want to give any interviews, which is like odd, because if your husband goes missing, you'd think you'd go on camera being like, you know, get your ass home, bitch.
Get your hat and your ass home. Get your ass.
But you think, I mean, if you went missing, I'd be in front of the cameras like, where are you? Get home.
Yeah, unless you killed me.
That's a good point. She's been, you know, extremely weird about the whole thing. And it's noted that, you know, when in the early days of his disappearance, she was exactly what they thought a grieving wife would look like, you know, upset, distraught, crying, like, you know, that her husband and father of their 18-month-old daughter at this point, you know, was gone missing completely, like without a trace. But after just a few short weeks of looking, she's ready to just have this whole thing cleaned up, closed up, and have him officially declared dead. Hmm. So, which is like
insurance? Like she wants to like move on and get the money or something? Is that?
Boy, you took the words out of my mouth. Oh. So we're like, okay, maybe she just wants closure, right? You think this has got to be hard on a family. Maybe she just wants to have it closed and move on. That just wasn't an option for his mom, Cheryl, because if it wasn't for her, maybe it would have started to quiet down a bit, but she just would not shut up about it. And you can't just declare someone dead just because like you say, you know, they're probably dead. You can't, it doesn't work like that. There's actually a process that you need to go through in the courts to officially have like the legality sorted out, and you get proof that the person is indeed, you know, dead and likely never going to. It's years. Yeah, I think it's like 4 years before you can officially declare someone dead. That. And there is a clause, unless there is significant evidence showing that this person is never going to return again.
Right.
So about 6 weeks after he goes missing, they stop the search efforts. And it's mentioned that they likely would have continued, but Denise told them to just stop. And in fact, the next day after they stop the search, she holds a memorial service for Mike. Which is kind of fishy. Like people were like, the day after you stop operation, you're like now doing your memorial. Like it just seemed really timed out and planned.
Most people that are like deeply in love, like it's your everything. You cannot have closure. Like you will forever like search and like, right? Like, and just not want to give up.
I think a lot of cases there's talk of, you know, what people should be doing. There's a lot of assumptions of like, you know, they should do this, they should do that. Like, this is how people should grieve. This is what a grieving person looks like. But it's not a wash. It's not like there's no consistency. Everyone does this differently. But again, Mike's mom was just chirping in the corner the whole time saying that this is unacceptable. Like she's not going to just go to this memorial and you know, just be okay with the fact that he's gone and dead and never coming back.
But 6 weeks, if he was out there, I mean, clearly you can't survive for 6 weeks.
Right. I don't think, I mean, there were talks that Cheryl thought maybe he could be still alive and just ran off somewhere, but she probably knows that something has gone wrong, but she wants to find his body. She just cannot sleep until she knows that his body has been found.
Sure. Yeah.
And Denise is starting to get pissed off with Cheryl. She's like, if you ever want to see your granddaughter again, like, you need to stop this right away.
Oh, they have kids.
Which was...
you said that in the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Remember Ainsley and Ainsley?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Like, pay attention!
Yeah. I just cut that out.
So, Denise threatens Cheryl. She's like, smarten up. Like, I'm not letting you see your granddaughter if you keep this up. Cheryl is now getting frustrated with Denise because she's like, why are you acting so sketchy? If this was your daughter, you'd be out searching and doing everything that you could. And Denise is like, well, that's different. Like, how is it different? Pardon? I don't think so.
It's a mother thing.
So if anything, Denise's behavior during this whole thing should give me even more reason to dig into what happened, because she's acting super sketchy. But something was about to happen that wouldn't help Cheryl in continuing her search for Mike's body. In June, about 6 months after now Mike went missing, an angler, do you know what an angler is?
A fisherman.
Okay. Is that just like an official way of saying? They call them an angler. Anyways, fisherman, angler, notices a pair of floating waders in the area.
Mm.
And at first they're like, okay, this might have something to do with this guy that went missing. So they notify the crews right away, and they come out and start digging around again. And wouldn't you know, they find a jacket and a flashlight. And inside the jacket pocket, they find a fishing license registered to...
Mike.
Correct. The license is registered to Jerry Michael Williams. So 6 months at the bottom of this sludgy water and supposedly belonging to someone who had...
Mike's... It wasn't just like, oh, you call me Mike. It's his middle name.
That's what I said.
Oh, fuck. All right, well, I'm tired. It's Monday. I'm like, it wasn't out of nowhere. It's just, he wanted to be called by his middle name. Did you say that?
Yes!
Okay.
Oh my God. Your mind is somewhere else.
It's called tired.
Okay. So there were...
sleeping in our bed all last night because she had a scary dream. Apparently her doll came alive. I'm like, damn right, that would be scary. I don't blame you. Anyway, sorry. Let's go.
So a few weird things about this discovery. So the jacket was still in pristine condition. There was no rips. It was not even really... Okay, again, the water is like sludgy, disgusting, swampy water. You'd think it'd be all gross. The flashlight still worked. It looked brand new. Like, if it's under the water for 6 months, you'd think that it wouldn't work, right?
Probably. I mean, if it's like one of those hardcore, like, waterproof...
No, but apparently it wasn't. Awesome, it was like a cheapy one.
Then that would be hard, no.
Despite all of these weird mysteries, Denise is like, bingo, bitches. Now I can show this evidence to the courts and have Mike officially declared legally dead so that she can get his death certificate.
Okay.
So that I can cash out on this big-ass life insurance policy.
There was a big-ass life?
There was. $1.5 million, to be exact.
USD, damn.
But back then, too.
That's like $2 million Canadian easy.
That's correct. So this is the stage in the episode where we go from, like, normal investigative facts to twisted what in the actual fuckery. Because, I mean, there's no surprise that, A, Denise's behavior over the past 6 months was super strange.
Yeah, I mean.
And, B, Cheryl wasn't going to let this official death certificate stop her.
Okay, just take a pause. Like, why do people have large health insurance policies? Like, all you're doing is just putting a bigger, like, target on your head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more incentive for you to be dead, not alive. So, like, really, it's basically like putting a bounty on your own head and you're paying for it monthly for years.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to create more, like, I don't know. what's
but
the
we
word?
We have a million, don't we?
Yeah, a million each. Yes.
So, but again, 1.5 million back in 2000, the year 2000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of money. You're absolutely
correct. Yeah, well, it's still
correct.
Like easy double.
Right.
You know, so like if I had $2 million on my head all of a sudden,
But more incentive. You have to think like maybe because he's a risk taker, he does a lot, you know, he has guns, he is hunting, like something like this could happen. Right. Like you never know. And after the courts grant this approval to Denise, she went on to claim the $1.5 million and she lived happily ever after. Just kidding.
Bullshit.
No, obviously not. So the insurance company pays it out, and they did raise a few red flags because the policy that was added to Mike's plan a few months before his disappearance.
Okay, why do people always do these things? It's like so obvious. Don't you watch TV? Like, you don't.
This was back in 2000, so maybe they didn't. Maybe
it's just always like a week before he died. Man, it's so easy.
But okay, thinking of this now back months. For a second, this is an 18-year-old case. So you're telling me for 18 fucking years, the insurance policy never triggered any sort of long-term investigation? Like, they looked at it because the person... Listen, you're going to lose your shit. The person who registered Mike for this insurance plan was Brian, his best friend.
What?
Brian was an insurance broker.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay.
Signed him up for this plan a few months before his disappearance. I mean, like, okay, it might not seem that weird that this could happen. I mean, there probably has been nuances where this has happened and it turns out to be fine, you know, but obviously they're going to investigate it. Right. But shortly after Mike's out of the picture, Brian leaves his wife.
For Denise.
Kathy.
Oh my God.
So they start dating and they move into the house that Mike and Denise got married, lived together, had their kid in. Brian moves in and they start a life. And I think as the story unfolds, it's determined that they were having an affair, obviously long before Mike's disappearance. So you can see where this is going, right? They even go on to get married 5 years later. And, I can't handle like how obvious this is, like, and how they went 18 years. Right. So I'll get there. But apparently there wasn't much to go off on this policy claim investigation. And Denise was in fact paid out and there were no questions asked. Like, I still don't understand how, but whatever. There were some talks about maybe Mike didn't know that this policy was taken out. Maybe it was Denise and Brian plotting this behind his back, signed off on him. And it's possible that he didn't have any idea. I don't know. I mean, back then you probably could, right? Because I know now you both need to be in person and like sign, right? But who knows back then?
Right.
And it was Brian, like it's his friend.
And you could just not be following the rules.
That's exactly it too. So there's still speculation about that, but now Denise and Brian live happily ever after. No, just kidding. I mean, they did for a while, but Cheryl, Mike's mom, if you remember, this whole time she's still doing her own investigation, even though the policing efforts have long since been stopped. She just wouldn't sleep until his body was located. She was like, I am not, you'll have to kill me before I stop looking for his body. She even wrote to her city council something like not every day for 9 years, begging for help and looking for more clues into Mike's mysterious disappearance. And I guess by this point, they're just, you know, classifying it as a mysterious death and it kind of just goes cold.
Right.
She had many questions like and there were a few good points that she brought up. Like, why were his clothes in such good condition? You know, if he got eaten by an alligator, you'd think they'd be ripped to shreds and have holes in them. Mm-hmm. Why was his boat turned off? Why was the tank full of gas? The boat launch where his Bronco was found would have been the place where he would have put his boat out into the lake. But
So you're saying that maybe he never even went on the boat. Maybe they just launched the boat and staged everything and he could have been like killed before even getting on the boat.
Yeah, they were talking about that.
Think of that until now.
Yeah, because apparently the place where he launched his boat was not where he normally would go to park. And it was like a weird undeveloped patch of mud there. And there were a concrete patches like not far away. So like, why wouldn't he use that one?
Right.
The storm the night before.
You're saying like the boat launch, like the ramp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. The storm that I was talking about the night after he was reported missing had some west winds that should have pushed his boat the opposite direction than it was actually found. So like a weird, couple weird nuances where his mom just like, he also never hunted alone. So she just thought it was really weird that he was apparently going hunting like early morning, crack of dawn, by himself. So she even hired a private investigator who sided with everything that she was saying. Even she hired like specialized alligator, whatever you call them. And they even said like, yeah, everything that you said makes sense. Like an alligator would not eat someone whole. You'd find some sort of remnants, but unfortunately nothing can be made out of any investigations.
Cause there's no proof.
Yeah. There's just no proof. And they also did a really shitty job preserving the scene right from the get go, because if you remember, they went down to the, and when they called everyone to go down, right away, they automatically thought that this was an accident. This has happened 79 times before. So they didn't preserve anything like in terms of tire tracks. Maybe there were other cars. They had volunteers down there doing search and rescue. So there was just a lot of like evidence.
Kind of makes sense. I mean,
yeah, yeah, it does. It, and I don't think that they're wrong in doing that, but I just think it hurt their case, hurt Cheryl's case in this situation. After a decade of getting the runaround and the investigators classifying this a cold case, Cheryl still didn't care, man. She was a hustler. And she was just waiting for anything, a tip, his body, a slip up by someone that knows something. And on August 5th, 2012, so this is 12 years later, something cracked that would start spilling out some details about Mike's disappearance that I want to say that no one saw coming. But like, let's be honest, like we all saw this coming. Denise and Brian's relationship started to crumble. It had been 12 years since Mike's disappearance, and they have been through it all. She was
marriage started based on murder, so I mean, it's gonna usually have a little bit of stress, I would imagine. If my relationship was based on a murder,
like I can't imagine living with that for 12 years.
I don't know how you live.
So Brian was apparently addicted to porn and just was like a sex addict. And Denise like just had strains with that. So they were planning to separate and divorce. And Brian did not want that. He wanted to stay married. Like he wanted to make it work with Denise. And she was just basically like shutting him out. She wouldn't answer his calls, return his text messages. Like it got really bad. So Denise is driving to work one day and she's on the phone with her sister, and all of a sudden in the backseat of her car, Brian pops up behind her.
Oh my God.
And he's got a gun to her ribs.
Oh my God.
And he's saying, you know, apparently he claims that his intent was he was going to kill himself, but he basically told Denise like, take me back or I'm going to kill myself. And she eventually talked him down, was like, okay, like, you know, we'll work this out. And he was like, don't go to the cops. Like, I'll kill myself. Like, let's work this out. And she managed to like somehow talk him off the ledge, drives him back to his car at, I think it was at a parking lot somewhere. And he gets out of her car, and in the back seat, he takes along with him out of the car, a tarp, a spray bottle of bleach, and some sort of weapon, like a tool or like a hammer or crowbar, something.
Hatchet.
So she's like, he was gonna fucking murder me. Like, I'm not stupid, right?
Wow.
So she goes to the cops right away. Like, she drops him off, heads straight straight to the cop.
What the fuck? That's some serious messed up shit. And he's like, oh, okay. Sorry, my bad. We had a disagreement. Yeah. Let's just call it like a minor rough patch.
Yeah. You know? So,
he's gonna fucking murder you, but you know what? Just get over it.
Like, no, we're good, right? We're good.
We're good. Okay. Let's go have a coffee.
So she gets to the police station and tells them everything, that Brian's like a psycho. He threatened to kill her. He had a gun to my ribs. And they arrest him. And he gets booked for, I think his charges were 20 years in jail for aggravated assault. I don't know. What do you call it?
Attempted burner?
Attempted murder. Thank you.
Jesus.
Oh, you read my mind. And so he's locked up. I'm locked up. Go let me out. Go let me out. I'm locked up. So.
Okay.
This is crazy how this happens. And Denise has balls. Do you think Denise had anything to do with this?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Right?
She's. So who's going to tell Denise or Mike?
I think not Mike. Mike's dead. You mean Brian.
I'm sorry, Brian. Yeah. Brian's going to definitely talk and say, oh, she's was part of it. And yeah, that's what's going to happen.
So here you go.
I had told him that we were going to go to a secret special spot to go hunting. And that he needed to bring his waders. I had to make sure that he brought his waders because the belief was there was kind of like a, there still is probably like a duck hunter's myth that if you fall overboard with your waders, you're going to sink really quick and drown. We headed out and there was a deep area, maybe a couple hundred yards from the landing that we put in at. And we got to that area that I knew was a deep area. And I don't remember exactly how I got him to stand up, but I don't know if I pretended something was wrong with the motor or the weight in the boat was off or something, but I basically stopped the boat and got him to stand up. And when he did, I pushed him into the water. And he was, like, struggling. And the motor of the boat was still running. And I pulled off just a little bit to get kind of away from him so that he couldn't reach back into the boat. And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know if he was trying to swim or I didn't know what was going on. But what I came to find out or eventually realized was he was taking the waders and the jacket off. And he got those off, and I think I forgot to tell you about this part before, but I remember now that that area of the lake had a lot of snags, a lot of dead trees that come up out of the water, and there's a lot of stumps that come up out of the water. And he swam over to one of those stumps and held on to it. And he was panicking, and I was panicking, and none of this was, like, going well. I thought it was going to go. And I didn't know what to do. But, he started to yell. And I didn't know how to get out of that situation. And so I had my gun in the boat. And so I loaded my gun and I made one or two circles around. And I ended up circling closer towards him. And he was in the water. And as I passed by, I shot him.
Wow. That's nuts.
So Brian had planned with Denise this whole time that they wanted to be together, and Denise didn't want to go through a divorce. I guess, you know, how I mentioned at the beginning, they went through Christian school. So I think it was like against her religion or something that she didn't want to go
against her religion to divorce, but not to kill somebody.
Apparently the plan was that they were going to push him overboard and hopefully he would have just like drowned.
Which
on
is
his
murder,
own.
But how is that?
I know.
How are they
trying to justify that?
Oh,
is just
Lord.
Insane. But
he seems like actually like very emotional, right? Like,
yeah, he's not like cold blooded type, but
how the fuck could you do that?
I don't know how
to innocent
to your
person,
best friend,
your friend
that you've been
that's fucked
since
up.
Elementary school.
Yeah,
they knew
can,
each other.
I don't understand that.
And
he has a child.
They both
Holy
have kids.
Fuck.
Just fucking
sorry,
ridiculous.
Yeah, that's just.
I know. So the idea was that, I mean, they killed to love, apparently, and they had planned their alibis down to Denise staying at home and making that call around noon that he was missing. And Brian was supposed to go on a hunting trip with his father-in-law, Kathy's dad, that morning. So that was his alibi, that he was going to make that a quick thing, get home and go fishing with the father-in-law. But things ran later than planned because, you know, there was some struggle and, he, you know, Mike must have been so confused what was going on this whole time. He doesn't know, like, he gets pushed in the water by his best, like, he's like, he must be thinking,
it's a bad way to go.
It's just so horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Brian got arrested for his attack on Denise, they told him, like, hey, listen, now's your opportunity. If you have something you want to tell us about what happened, because, you know, we're not buying the story that he just disappeared. Now's your time. And he...
Or what, though? Like, I'm just curious.
What, like, do you mean?
Does he get some benefit by being honest?
Yeah. Like, he, I don't think, got as serious of a charge as he would have gotten. But he also... So he also implicated Denise in this whole thing because apparently it was her idea from the start. But then her lawyer said, you know, this, she has nothing to do with this. This is all Brian's plan. Mm-hmm. But Brian, like, told details about how, you know, Denise had suggested that all four of them go out fishing. And then even they were planning at one point to kill Kathy in there along with Mike, and only those, the two would be survivors, and it would be like this hero thing that they, you know, there were so many talks of how this is going to happen. And it all led down to Brian taking Mike out for this early morning fishing, duck hunting, whatever they were doing, trip, with the plan that this is what was going to happen.
I do not think that if you consent to, like, murdering somebody with somebody, like a partner, that they're not going to do it to you at some point down the road.
I know, right?
Like,
or if, like, you cheat on someone and you leave your spouse for them, like, what's to say you, like,
that's not going
to
happen again.
Like, yeah. It's history repeats itself.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, it tends to do that, doesn't it?
So after 18 years, Cheryl finally got justice for Mike's disappearance, and God, I, like, God love her, because
so they never found a body though.
They found his body. Brian had pulled him out of the water.
Oh, wow. Eh?
And put him in the back of his truck with the tarp and drove back to his father-in-law's house. Or no, sorry. Drove back to his house, crawled back in bed with Kathy, and woke up and was like, oh, sorry. Like, I slept in. I missed the fishing trip with your dad. I'll have to give him a shout and say, like, I slept in. He drugged Kathy the night before and gave her sleeping pills so that she would sleep in late and not wake up to find him gone. So, you know, she wakes up thinking he was home the whole time, and that was her alibi, his alibi. So this was a well thought out plan, and it bit them in the ass.
Yeah. Wow. That is an interesting story. I did not see that one coming.
Lots of twists and turns.
Wow. It's a whole lot of awful.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed listening to our
I'm not sure if I did. It was interesting.
Our crime popping, like, today.
I feel awful now.
If you want to follow us for more, you can find us over on Instagram at Crime Poppers and at crimepoppers.com. We'll link all the show notes and sources and some photos if you want to check out more. We can link the videos of the confessions and some other documentary resources. So thank you for listening, and we'll pop open a new case with you next week.
Don't take out any health insurance policies. Thank you.